Hello, folks. Welcome back to another episode of Stoner TV, produced by NuVisu, coming to you from Leipzig, Germany. And today with a very interesting subject that is, well, it's not widely known in Europe or in the German-speaking world, but it's hardly totally unknown in the international world. And what I'm talking to you, what I'm talking about today to you is an amazing discovery that was made in the 1980s in Switzerland. And that's the reason why it was, because it was in Basel, in the German-speaking Swiss world, that this information is, yeah, it's known. It's known in by some people, but it's hardly known in worldwide. But this is an amazing discovery, and it's important stuff. And I guess you will like it. It's called in German. This discovery is called the Uhrzeit Code, and. Well, since there's not many stuff going on in English language about that, I try to translate it one-on-one, and then it's something called the Primeval Code. The Primeval Code. Now, what's about this? It was a discovery made by two Swiss scientists, Guido Ebner and Heinz Schürch, who were working for the Swiss chemical giant Ciba Geigy in Basel in Switzerland. And what they were discovering is that if you create an electrostatic field, and then within this field you put seeds and also young plants, you know, then these plants, these seeds, these organisms, they change when they grow adult. They grow in another form. Now, the best example where you can see this is with fern. We all know fern. I mean, it's a common plant. What these guys at Ciba Geigy discovered is when you put young plants of a common fern, if you put it into this electrostatic field, it turns out as a plant that is not the same fern that you might expect, but it turns out into a different plant, into something like this. And what they say is, this is a primeval form of this same plant. So this is like what fern looked like millions of years ago. A plant like this didn't grow on this earth for a long, long time. But if you put these young plants into this field, then you change something in the genetics. And this is a major discovery. Now, these two guys working for Ciba Geigy, they did not only do these experiments on fern. They started out with microorganisms, bacteria, which were changing. They were doing this with wheat seeds. And they were also even doing this with fish, with trouts. Trouts are a fish that is very close to human beings. I mean, we have trout farming and stuff. And so they took the eggs of the trouts, put it into this electrostatic field, and wow, surprise, surprise, out came individuals, fish, that had different features than the parent generation. They were bigger, they turned out more colorful. Even some features of their body were different, because, for example, the lower jaw was getting very big, different than with the generation of their parents. Now, this is amazing. And even their behavior turned different. They were again like wild trouts. That means that if you want to take some of these fishes out, the fish, the trouts that we know, they don't resist. I mean, they are so used to human beings. You go in and you've got them. Yeah? But these other trouts, I mean, they were, as in the moment you grab in the water, they go away. They are much more wild, in even their behavior. So this is an amazing discovery. I also want to tell you, because I'm not a scientist, but I guess it's quite important to get this clear. What is an electrostatic field? They also speak of E-fields, just to make it simpler, an electric field, E-field. Well, what that is you have a system of high voltage, two electrodes and with a big difference of voltage potential, yeah? But you have not energy running, energy flowing. That's why it's static. There's no motion. It's like we all know this in nature. Before we have a lightning or something, you have exactly this. You have a different potential of voltage in the atmosphere and on the ground, and this is the static field. Then when the flash comes, then it's no more static. But you know, before the flash comes, this is a static field, and we human beings can feel this. Now, what is absolutely amazing with this discovery, there are a few points that I want to share with you. The first major conclusion that we get out of these experiments is that E fields have an influence on organisms, on living organisms. Now, this is a major discovery. We guessed that before, isn't it? I mean, we talk about electrosmog and all these things. We know about that, but from a scientific point of view, I mean, this is, there's no danger. That's what they say. Oh, this is all fair. But these experiments prove that at least an electrostatic field has a major influence in the growth and the development of organisms. And if it's an electrostatic field, of course, we might ask ourselves, what about electromagnetics? What about what we call electrosmog? That has no influence on biology, on organisms? Obviously not. I mean, if even the electrostatic field is having such a major influence. Well, the second conclusion we get out of this is that the genetics in organisms, it's not something stare and fix, but an opposite, it's changeable. It's dynamic. It can move. Now, this is also a totally different understanding of what genetics are, because we are taught that the entire form that your body takes, you know, is defined by genetics, and there's only one way, and this is fixed and this is stable. Only maybe by modern gene tech, you take some genes out or put something in, by that you change it. But naturally, this is fixed and stable. And evolution goes only, they say, by accidental mutations, and takes long, long time that things are changing. But what this technology or this discovery is showing, that wow, forms can change very, very fast from one generation to the other. Things can change. This entire genetic, this genome is not something stable, but it's dynamic. And this is exactly what life is. Life is also dynamic, and this is also a major discovery. Then the third point I would say is that this proves that the genetics, the entire genome, is a sort of an of a memory. There's a memory within the genetic code, a memory of experiences or of life forms that came before. Now, this is also so interesting, because so often we talk about our forefathers and their way of living and experiments or experiences, and what we see here, what is proven, and this is also what many of us thought. Yeah, there's something going on. I mean, there's some memory in your body. Yeah, but this is now proven that you get out of a common fern, a common plant, you can create a plant that in the way it used to grow millions of years ago. That's why it's called the primeval code, because it goes back to this ancient times. In this case, with a fern, by the way, of course, nobody has ever seen a fern that is 200 million years old or something. But we know that the shape of the leaves, this is seen in petrified stuff. So we know that in ancient times there used to be ferns like that. Of course, this is not a perfect proof that this fern is exactly like a fern 200 million years ago, but it all points to that with this technology, that there's an influence on this genetic code, and this makes the genetic track to elder memories, to elder experiences. And if it's necessary, I mean, the organism can just sort of switching on certain genes, certain memories, or switch them off. And this is also a major, major discovery here. So, interesting is also the way that these two scientists, the way they presented their information. Because they did it in a special way. Usually, if you're a scientist and you make some discoveries, you publish this in a certain periodica, in certain scientific journals and magazines. They went a different way. Of course, because they work for Ciba-Geigy, the company, they took patents on these discoveries. But the two scientists, they took a major step forward because that's what I guess. I guess they already knew that with this kind of discoveries, they won't make a big success within their Ciba-Geigy company. Because Ciba-Geigy, they are one of the major chemical players, companies, and they are working, their core business is all kinds of herbicides, pesticides, gene tech, green tech, biotech, and stuff. So what they were doing is kind of the opposite of what their company was interested in. So I guess they already realized that. And I guess they were worried that their work is just vanishing in some desk, you know, and never seen again. That's why they took the step forward and they presented their inventions in a very unusual way. They did it in Swiss TV in 1988, one of a major entertainment show on Saturday night. Saturday night entertainment, prime time on TV, with the showmaster was a guy called Kurt Felix, which is probably the most known face of Swiss television in the last 30 years. So, I mean, so it was big time, and millions of people saw this live. And they were presenting their inventions. You can still find this on YouTube, the original of this Swiss television show, where they presented these plants, where they presented their work with microorganisms, where they presented their work with droughts. And this was just sending out a shockwave, because it was many people seeing. Of course, probably the majority didn't get what this is, but many people who witnessed that did not forget. And that's the way they made this discovery public. But of course, the Swiss chemical factories, they didn't have any interest in that. And let's have a look a little bit closer on Ciba-Geigy. So let's have a look at Ciba-Geigy. Nowadays, Ciba-Geigy doesn't exist anymore. It was one of these big companies of Swiss chemics in the city of Basel, which is exactly at near the border to Germany and France. And so this is the Rhine, the River Rhine, and in Basel there were two big Swiss companies. On the left side you see Sandoz Chemics, and on the right side this was Ciba-Geigy. And then in the 1990s, in 96 exactly, they were kind of having a chemical wedding. These two companies went together. There was this big fusion, and they had to invent a new name, you know, because Ciba-Geigy, Sandoz, these are still family names of the guys who founded these companies. But then it's getting too complicated, so they had to find this new name. And they came out with this nice example also for Newspeak. They came out with this name, Novartis. That's what they are called since 1996, Novartis. Now, ain't that interesting? I mean, Novartis, this is Newspeak. Yeah, this is there's some experts that get highly paid to invent these names. That this is not a word that existed before. Of course, we have two roots. Nov, both comes from Latin. Nov is new, and artis, art, the art, new art. You know, the new art. That's what they are calling themselves, and. Yeah, that's interesting, by the way, this finding of new names, isn't it? So, Novartis is now a giant in green tech and stuff. And of course, they had no interest at all in this sort of discoveries. After these discoveries came out, it not very much longer than the company decided to no more promote the stuff and to do something else. Now, why is that? Of course, it's you have to find the reasons for that in the logic of the company itself. Their core business is herbicides, is products of genetically modified seeds and stuff. This is their business. Very similar to Monsanto. This is better known, I guess. But they work on the same field. You know, this is the same stuff. This is green tech. And of course, within the logic of commerce, they had no interest in promoting this sort of discoveries, because this might make their own core business obsolete at one day. Yeah? So this is not, of course, they blocked any further discoveries of that. The patents, they rest and they are, nobody's working on this stuff there anymore. But still, I mean, I can understand that Novartis has no interest in that. But, I mean, we always think we live in a free world, don't we? And we think that if major discoveries are made that are helpful to make this world a better place, to solve some problems, we think naturally, well, then we take these discoveries into our life. But the truth is, it's not like that. It's not like that. I mean, This stuff is not very much promoted. There's a few scientists nowadays that are working on that, but not many are doing that. And obviously, it's in the English-speaking world, and English is the world language. This stuff is hardly known. So that proves itself that not many people deal with this stuff, with this Primeval Code. So why is that? Now, I've got this book with me, and you only can get the German edition. It's not translated yet, but maybe there's somebody from you out there who thinks this stuff is so important and you want to contribute something. Hey, why not translating this book? This comes from Luc Bürgin. Luc Bürgin is a Swiss journalist, and this is an excellent book which grabs all the entire story of this phenomena, even till our days now. This is even new information is in there. And so Luc Bürgin, he also asks this question: Why is nobody working on this? Why is he the only one? Yeah. And he himself gives the answer. He says that, well, like in many other great discoveries, the time was just not ready for this. And at this point, we come to a nice term. Actually, it's a German word, but you know it in English as well. A nice term, and it's called the Zeitgeist. The Zeitgeist. Actually, as a German, I would say it Zeitgeist. Zeit is the time, and Geist is ghost, the spirit of the time. That's what Zeitgeist is. I guess he has a point when he says, well, maybe the Zeitgeist wasn't ready for this, maybe in the future, in 50 or in 100 years, this will be rediscovered and then we will use it. Yeah. But is that so? Actually, I would take a different point on that. Because out of my opinion, out of my view, these discoveries are actually in harmony with the Zeitgeist. I would say these sort of inventions, this new understanding of nature and of the interplay that within the genome itself, and of the interplay of for example, the electrostatic field and the organisms, these discoveries are Zeitgeist. This is the leading us to a totally new understanding of nature, of energy, of this interplay. I would say this is exactly the Zeitgeist. I would say this is coming right in time, and I at that point we might even ask, I mean, where do ideas come from? Is there any idea that you can have that is outside the Zeitgeist? I mean, this is not a new idea. It's not only my thinking, but we are all connected. We are all in a spiritual way, or you might call it in a telepathic way, we are connected. So there's something, a collective organism, a collective consciousness. You might even say, like Rupert Sheldrake, you might speak of a morphogenetic field, which is very close to this stuff here. You know, this is linked, these matters. But what I want to say is there something that you can, any idea, any creative process, if you're making a big piece of art or a fine piece of music, is it really you that can put it on your shoulders and say, hey, this is it was my genius, was my melody, this is my painting, this is my knowledge? Or isn't there, I mean, where do we get these informations from? Isn't it just the way that, hey, when time is ripe, we human beings pick up these things? And all of a sudden, hey, wow, I've got this idea. But then it's not only you that got the idea. This is an ego illusion. But I would say, and I know this is a radical approach, but that's the way I see it, all ideas, all creative processes come out of a spiritual field. And we just pick it up. You might even say we human beings, we are media. And you might call that field God or whatever. I mean, this is just what terminology you want to lay on it. But this is where we get ideas from. And we can see that if we look in the history of science, for example, let's go 100 and a few years back, where the automobile industry was kicking off. I mean, there was this guy in Germany who invented the engine, the combustion engine, the Ottomotor. We still call it Otto, the Ottomotor. Why Otto? Because that was the guy's name. But was he then the only one who invented that? No. At the same time, there were people in France working on this. And we still know their names, Renault, Citroën. These are names of guys who worked on this. Like in Germany, Daimler. Like in America, Ford. Like Bentley in England. Yeah? So, and at that time, there was no international patents that if some guy invented that Otto could have said, hey, this is my invention, nobody else can touch it. And then he can decide, do I put it on the market? Do I develop it? Or do I say, no, we put this aside? At that time, it was not possible. But what I want to say is that the time was ready for inventing combustion, and then this just happened. This because it comes naturally. And I guess we are on this point now that we make these discoveries of waves, of interplay and these things. These are major discoveries that are totally changing our understanding of nature. Our modern understanding of nature is still based on 19th century and even elder models. But this is like some other discoveries, not the only one, of course. It's pointing to a new understanding of physics, of biology, and of the interplay of these fields. Yeah. And I think they come naturally. I think this is the natural flow. And let me digress here a little bit. And I want to put in another model that is pointing in that direction. Let's talk a moment about the zodiac and astrology. Well, we know the zodiac, this has to do with the precession of the equinox. That is just the fact that the stars on the sky, in a very, very slow manner, they rotate. And to rotate an entire circle, that is the so-called Platonic year, that takes more than 26,000 years for another circle. But definitely this is this motion. This is a natural thing. Of course, it's us human beings, what kind of scheme we lay on there. I mean, in Western astrology, we've got this 12 houses. And Chinese astrology as a little bit of another system. That is us humans, but what is nature is that the night sky is turning there slowly. So, and it's turning in the same rhythm, and by that it's a chronometer. It's like a big clock. That's what it is. Now, in astrology is the art of looking on this cosmic clock, so to say. And if you at any given spring equinox, if you go to Gizeh in Egypt, where the pyramids are, and then check out the Sphinx. The Sphinx is exactly orientated towards east. And on this specific day, and only on these days, on the equinoxes, the sun rises exactly in the east. Now, to say in what age do we live right now? It's defined there. If you stand there at the Sphinx, watching the sunrise, which comes exactly in the east, you need to watch what stars are behind there. You know, and if the sun is rising in the house of Pisces, we are still in the age of Pisces. If the sun is rising in the house of Aquarius, we are in the house of Aquarius. And what's happening right now, where we are right now, is exactly in between. And now we cannot define it on a day or a year, because of course we know this star belongs to Pisces, this star belongs to Aquarius, but where exactly is the border? Well, that's up to us human beings. And that's why there's no unity in saying when exactly does the Pisces end and the Aquarius start. But where they are all in common is the astrologers, that they say we are right now in this phase of moving from Pisces into Aquarius. That's where we are right now. Now let's check out Aquarius. This is the symbol of Aquarius. This is the symbol of Aquarius. And what do we see there? Waves. Now, in Aquarius, in the time of the Aquarian age, that's what the astrologers say, yeah? This will be an age where we understand the nature of waves. And vice versa, we understand that the nature is full of waves. Waves are anywhere. And some people are saying even the discoveries 100 years ago by Marconi, electro waves, radio waves and stuff, this was already marking the beginning of this Aquarian age with Marconi, waves. Now, this is also, this discovery of the primeval code has to do with this. Of course, it's an electrostatic field, yeah? But this has also to do with the influence that electromagnetic waves take on organisms and on material. These are discoveries that are coming right now. Waves is also the way that energy is moving. Yeah? This is also interesting. A wave you can only have if there's a medium. When there's nothing, in nothingness, there cannot not be a wave. A wave needs a medium. Like water is a medium, if you throw a stone in, waves. But also, life has a medium. And this is where we get to very interesting stuff in understanding nature. This is the new way of that we human beings should understand nature, and that we are part of it. So far, our old worldview is you might call it a reductionist worldview, a materialistic worldview. And in the old age, the ideas that to understand how anything is working, you just reduce it in the smallest parts. That's what we call what's called reductionism. You take in the smallest parts. Then it's like a big clock. And then if you understand the smallest parts, you understand how they one is influencing the other. Then you can construct it again, and then you might even construct in your own matter. You can change things. This is a materialistic worldview. The idea is that this entire universe is like a clock. It's a mechanical thing. Actually, this is exactly the worldview that is taught in by Freemason traditions and stuff, the great builder, that it's all in logic, that it's all a mechanic, like a big clock. But this is just not true. This is what we see now, which is not true. It's not that you understand how the stuff is working if you understand the single pieces, because life is not a clock and it's not a machine. But there's interplay between spirit and materia, and this is exactly what we see in this genetic field. Yeah? This is where you can say we're getting into something really new of understanding this. Yeah? But hey, let's go back to these waves. I might digress a little bit more, but that's the way I am. Isn't that interesting? This symbol, you see it somewhere else as well. Check out this here. This is an Indian sadhu in India. A sadhu is a wandering monk, and this is a Shiva sadhu, committed to the god Shiva, and the Shiva sadhus, they take this holy ash. It's called vibhuti, but it's asher. And there's many ways to do it, but they mark with this ash. They mark your forehead here, often with waves. Sometimes it's just like this. Sometimes two. Sometimes three. Many ways to do it. But I see this as a similar thing. And I even go one step further. I say this marking of the forehead by vibhuti is just pointing out a natural feature that we humans even have. I mean, check out this guy. He doesn't even need this vibhuti because it's already there. It's there as well. I'm joking on this, you know. I don't say, well, if you have lines like this on your forehead, you're like the Aquarian age. No, obviously it's not like that. I'm just pointing in this direction. This is, it's about the forehead, third eye, you know, understanding. This is what Aquarian age is. This is what it is. Understanding of waves, understanding of the nature of energy. This is what we're talking about. So I made this digression into astrology only to show again that out of my point of view, there is a continuation in the development of a single human as well as humanity, as a human family. There's a progress. And of course this progress is not linear. It goes up and down and you know, sometimes around, but there's a progress. And this is why I took this as an example, because astrology is just showing this, that it's a progressive world. It's not stable. And this is why this world is, by a philosopher like Leibniz, this is called the best of all possible worlds. Why? Because it's changing. Because we make mistakes, but out of mistakes we can learn. This is the thing. We can learn and we have a dynamic life. This is why this is the best of all possible worlds. And this is what astrology is also pointing to. So I took this only up to make us clear that, because I'm absolutely convinced these sort of discoveries, they are in tune with the zeitgeist. It's now up to us to understand these things. But there's certain big players that want to stop this natural flow of discovery, this flow of progress of humanity. And just like a river, you can build dams and stuff. They want to give this a spin into another direction. And we don't follow what is coming naturally right now in our development, but we're looking towards something different. And there you can see it's like a, I would say it's like a Faustian trip. What I mean by that, Faust, this is a literary figure coming from Goethe, one of the great German poets and also philosophers. And the idea is Faust, this is this man who in his age, he read every book. He got all the knowledge. But he didn't understand what is the inner core of life, this spiritual thing. This fine energy, this you might call it religious, a god, whatever. This he didn't see in his books, and he still didn't understand it. And a Faustian man or a man who is on this trip, it's like a hybris. It's you don't trust anymore nature. You want to understand it until the last piece. This reductionist worldview. You want to understand this big clock, yeah? And then not only understand it, but then use it on your own way. But why doing that? Because these people, they don't trust the natural flow. They don't trust in nature. So this is man controlling nature. This is the intellectual or the philosophical basis of what we are witnessing today in our world. Stuff like geoengineering. Where does this come from? I mean, if you ask any from some natural people, North American Indians or stuff, if you ask them, hey, what about geoengineering? They wouldn't even understand what. I mean, why should you engineer that? I mean, it's just perfect as it is. Don't grab into this. I mean, just trust in this flow of energy, you know, and tune yourself in. But these people have no trust. There's a break between these human beings and nature. They don't trust that anymore. They want to control it. And this is a Faustian trip. You might even call this is a devilish trip. This is something against creation of life. This is, I want to be creator myself. This is what this trip is. And this is the idea of all this modern and genetic technology. And it's not trusting this natural flow, but it's engineering with it, constructing with it. And this is what the trip that these guys are on. Now, but it's not only that these forces intervene in the natural flow of development and of progress and give it another turn. No, I even go further. I say that these forces, they work on these discoveries coming from the zeitgeist. They work on them. It's not only that they say, hey, there's nothing to find there. But in black projects, and now we come to phenomena like breakaway civilization, black technology, and all that stuff. You heard that before. They are working on these things. They are saying, hey, wow, that's amazing. We get new tools of intervening in organisms, physically as well as in the psyche. We didn't talk about that. What influence do we have on the psyche with these things? Wow, they work on it. I'm absolutely convinced, and maybe even for a long time. You know, the first guys who were doing experiments with plants and electricity, the first guys did that in the 1920s. There's this I had to write this down. This German guy, what he was called, Ernst Tamm, that was in the 1920s. He was already working with that by electric fields, can you make plants grow faster and stuff like that. Similar to what's going on in the primeval code. And they even had this term for it called electroculture. That's what they were working on, was electroculture in the 1920s. By the way, nice term. I mean, if I would find a rock band, I would call them electroculture. That sounds good to me. But hey, it's coming from the 20s. So maybe, I don't know, maybe already since that time in the black projects they were working on this. Like they were working on Tesla inventions. Of course they did. They didn't leave this to rest. In our universities, nobody's dealing with this. But I'm sure that in the breakaway civilization, they are working on this stuff. Maybe since the 20s, I don't know. But when the primeval code, when this stuff got out in the 80s, I guess that was the latest point where they took on and say, wow, that's amazing. Let's have a closer look. What's going on there? And this is not only a theoretical thinking of myself that I say, there's this breakaway stuff. No, I see proof for that in our world. And one thing I want to point to is 9/11. Now, at this point, we don't have the time to look at this entire stuff. What I'm convinced of when we talk about 9/11, the best work is the one of Dr. Judy Wood. And just in a nutshell, the proof, and I say it's proof, what Judy Wood brought on, is that on 9/11 in New York, there was a technology that is based on a total different understanding of physics and nature. And just in a nutshell, there was a technology where there was also a big E field, an electrostatic field. That was the hurricane. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, check out the work of Judy Wood. See, check it out. Then the ones of you who are familiar with their work know exactly what I'm speaking there. The hurricane is this big electrostatic field. And what happens if you have this field and then you interfere with different energies, Röntgen, X-ray, electromagnetic stuff. This is where something new is happening. Now, this is similar to this primeval code. I'm not saying, just to make it clear, I'm not saying that the primeval code is the same technology with what happened in 9/11. No. Because this primeval code is only an electrostatic field. But there's certain parallels. I guess it's both based on the same understanding of what nature is, the understanding of waves. So 9/11 is in my point of view, a good example where we can see that indeed they are working on these things. And it's not only that they stop promoting these inventions so that we don't deal with it anymore. No, they work on the inventions without telling you, and they create stuff that is against our natural interest. And let me bring in another example. Now, I know this is what I'm talking now is it's sort of speculative, and I know it's easy also to find opposite terms. I mean, many people argue about this, but let me throw it in. Talking about chemtrails. You've heard this term before. Chemtrails is airplanes bringing out aerosols, small particles, aluminium, barium and stuff in the atmosphere. Chemtrails, geoengineering. You've heard about that stuff. Now, I've seen that the first time in the beginning of the 2000s. I witnessed on my own, hey, something's going on in the sky. And these are not passenger flights because they are doing strange maneuvers in the sky over hours. What's going on there? You know, I witnessed that. And that's when I started researching this chemtrail stuff. And I know when this stuff came up, many people, we were all asking what is that? Why are they doing that? And I was also in the beginning, I was also in this explanation that, wow, okay, they are creating a shield, holding away light or energy that comes from the cosmos. At that time, I was still in this new age thinking, you know, that there comes new light and we get inspired, and which is still not totally wrong, because this is interference of energy. So I thought this chemtrail stuff would sort of be a shield, that this light, this information is not reaching us. I never dug into, they are here to poison the entire Earth, because, I mean, there could be easier ways if they just wanted to get rid of people. And now in 2019, obviously, we're still here, and it's not about poisoning everything. But I was always wondering, what is this chemtrail story? What are they doing there? What's the reason? And for me, for now already for quite a few years, I came to the point that I don't really know what it is, because it's part of a technology that I don't understand. And it's only part of a technology, and that's why I don't understand it. Similar like 9/11, there's some technology going on that you and me, we don't know that. And this is my personal look on that. That this geoengineering, chemtrailing stuff has to do exactly with that. Now if we get these discoveries of the Primeval Code into our mind, and I told you it is about creating an E-field, a high voltage system. Maybe that is what is going on there with the chemtrails, because. Isn't it that with these aerosols, you create an atmosphere that is with a bigger energy flow? Energy can flow in there, and isn't it like a big electrode that is, of course, this comes also naturally, but you're changing this. Now, what happens with us here on Earth if they change this, and we are living in between, exactly like in the experiments that these two guys did? Hey, this is changing some basic parameters of not only human life, but of life here on Earth. This is a big way of geoengineering. Yeah? And now they might do it out of good purposes, because they don't trust nature. They say we can do it better than nature, and hey, we're doctoring now, we're engineering. We are the big engineer, we are the best, we do this. But hey, I don't know how you see it, but for me, in me, there's all these red flags coming out. Hey, this is not right to doctor on these things. Because I trust the natural flow, so get away with all this. Don't manipulate there. This cannot be the right thing. But this we really have to take in consideration, that this has maybe to do with each other. So, but I want to end up with a little bit more positive thoughts. Because what I see with this Primeval Code is it gives us a tool that can be, it can be a curse. Yeah? It can be used against us. It can be used destructive. It can be used in a manipulative way. But it can also be a blessing for us. Because of course, with this tool, we could use it for healing, for reversing certain developments that seem to be unreversible. Because that's what we always heard. You know, if certain processes are gone through, there's no way back. They talk about junk DNA. Most of the human DNA is junk, they say. And you cannot go back. It's only a one-way ticket in one direction. But with this, we might even activate elder memories. And by that, we can maybe cure or heal some total wrong developments. We came back on the right track, you see? There's a possibility for, like when you're working with a computer, you can, and you've done something wrong, I mean, you can make a new start. You just click it back. So you get back on to the beginning. Yeah? This is an amazing potential also for healing, for solving the problems, that we have on Earth. Social problems, because with this technology, maybe it might be very much easier to create the right food for the right lands, that you have, can also grow food in very arid regions, that you can feed the world. This might be helpful. And so social problems, but as well as ecological problems. If we get really this world messed up with its geoengineering and with this gene manipulation on organisms, and some of us have really these horror visions of which way are we going there? But with this, we might even have a chance of correcting something if it's getting too worse. So that's amazing joker that is in the game there. With this technology, the it's not the only one. I was talking about 9/11, and like Judy Wood is also arguing and making a point. Hey, this technology, if you understand the way this is working, it's only one step to free energy. It's only one step to free energy. That was with the 9/11. Now, check it out. If we would have free energy, and then if we would have discovered what these two guys just opened up the door, and if we understand really the way we can work with plants and living life forms, wow! I mean, we could really change. We could really heal. Now I know there's a big ethic question. Should we do that at all? And I'm saying to you, trust nature. We don't have to fool around with it. Just let the nature flow, and that's the best way to do it for an individual as well as for all of life, for Earth. But on the other hand, I mean, I also see that we are human beings, and we are born on this world, and we have the right to work with this world. We have a right to use the resources, and it's only a matter of how do we organize ourselves within this logic of capitalism, of commerce. It makes sense to geoengineer. It makes sense to intervene in the natural flow and to spin it in another direction. Yeah, but is that the right system to organize ourselves? I mean, they say there's no alternative, but is really there no alternative to capitalism? And maybe even a better term is total commercialization, because capitalism is already a political term. If you're against capitalism for some people, then you are lefty or so. But I mean, this is not what I'm talking about. This is old stuff. No, I'm talking in a total commercialized world. Is that the right way to let information flow? I guess not, but we can change that. There's other ways of organizing ourselves. We should organize ourselves that we have a free flow of information. By the way, that's exactly what we are doing here with this series, as well as a new visa. Our idea is to make information flow and not hide it behind some payroll or paywall or whatever, but let it flow. Because we believe in this natural flow of information. that this is the best we can do. But in a world that is totally commercial, and if for everything you have a patent, then you don't have the flow of information and the exchange. You make it your own. It's like an ego trip. And this we I guess we should really overthink. And see if we can find another way. And So I say we can work with this stuff from an ethical point of view. But before we do that, there's a lot of work. Because we have to find out what is really the nature of energy, genetics, materia, spirit and materia. We have to find out about that before we start intervening in the system. Because if you intervene somewhere where you don't understand it, I mean, you mess things totally up. But even that, even when they are messed up, we might have a chance to come back to a stable point. So this is what is really, really amazing there. And I feel myself like a child of the time. I can feel. I'm not a scientist. It will not be me who's making these discoveries. But what I can see as a child of time is, wow, this is the way to go. These guys opened up their door, and behind that door, there's an amazing stuff to discover. Hey, let's go in there, step by step, you know. We should always consider that there's also a certain danger in if we start manipulating seeds and stuff. And it's easy. That's the thing. It's easy to do. It does not take billion-dollar laboratories. This is there are easy solutions, that can be used for third world countries. You know, simple stuff, not patents and not expensive, and you get in totally dependence, like third world farmers that are totally dependent on Monsanto seeds and shit like that. No, we can find easy creative solutions, but before we do that, we should really find out. There's a lot of work to do, a lot of scientific work. Which energy is influencing plants in which way? How much force do you need? How much time and so on? So it takes a long, or a lot of work, but especially if we have free flow of energy, we in little time we can understand things like that, and that's the way we should go. We should go through this door, and should not follow this path of gene tech, green tech. That's all coming so nice, you know. They're saying, we feed the world and stuff, but it's the wrong way. This is this Faustian way, and we should not follow that. I'm absolutely convinced, let's go there. Let's go to this natural stuff. This is holistic. You know, the gene tech that is taught in companies like Novartis, this is reductionist. You cut this stuff into the smallest pieces. But the opposite view of it is holistic. You don't cut it into little pieces, but you see the whole. Holistic. This is the alternative. And that's the way the nature and life works. You don't understand it if you cut it into little pieces. You don't understand the butterfly, you know, if you put it with needles and stuff. I mean, you see it, how it's flying. You know, it's just a different approach on this entire stuff. So it's a holistic thing, because with the primeval code, with this technology, you never change the genome of the plants. The genome of the current fern and the ancient fern, the genome is the same. It's just a matter of what genes of this genome, of this entire pack, which are activated. The scientists speak of gene expression, which genes are expressed and are part of the plan, and which are just passive, which are active, which are passive. But you never change the genome. You don't intervene there and cut pieces out or put other pieces in. This is dangerous stuff. The holistic way of viewing is, you see the whole, and it's this whole is dynamic. It can go this way. It can switch on and switch off certain genes and coming with certain informations. Some of these informations already millions of years back. This is a holistic way of working with a gene. That's why also Luc Burgin he called his book, he gave it a subtitle here, The Ecological Alternative to Gene Technology. There's an alternative, it's exactly the opposite. It's an holistic approach, and yeah, that's the way, that's the direction we should go for. Well, let me stop on this point. I hope this was helpful for you to make us understand that there's a new territory, a new field, and this is where we should go to. And I'm quite convinced that there's a lot of people out there who've kind of a eureka effect, something like, aha, oh wow, if this stuff, if you put this together with other stuff that you already know, like Judy Wood and other things, wow, we get a new understanding of life, of nature, and there's great potential of healing in it, and to make this world a better place. Well, thanks a lot for listening to this show, for watching, and please help us in our work. It would be nice if you spread this knowledge, and I would be happy if you click in again for the next time. Still much more to come. Saying so long from Leipzig, Germany. Have a good time. See you next time. So long. Bye-bye.